Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, a weekly public affairs program that introduces you to the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Today's program over News Talk 1310 WBFD is hosted by Lloyd Roach. Bedford County Speaks is heard every Saturday at this time. Now let's join Lloyd for this week's discussion on Bedford County Speaks.
Thank you, Matt DeFazio, and good morning to you, and welcome to Bedford County Speaks, the weekly public affairs program over News Talk 1310 WBFD. Today's program is presented as a public service by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, right here on Route 220 in Bedford. That's Thomas, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I'll return in a moment with today's guests, Carl DeFebo and John Cottle, from the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission, when Bedford County Speaks continues.
At the turn of the 19th century, Bedford was a small but growing frontier town in the southwestern Alleghenies. The opening of the West had begun, and along with it were families eager to start a new life. Among them was Demetrius Gallitzin, an unassuming but dynamic Roman Catholic priest, whose mission was to evangelize the region for the Son of God, Jesus Christ. Father Gallitzin was eager to form a new church in this bustling town called Bedford. With the assistance of some willing Catholics, in 1816 he established a new parish called St. Thomas the Apostle. The new church on East Street at the end of the borough was small but functional. Years and two more church buildings later, St. Thomas the Apostle would grow to a major moral and community force in Bedford. St. Thomas the Apostle celebrates 200 years of continuous and faithful service to Bedford County. We hope you will join us in celebrating this significant bicentennial with the parish family. St. Thomas the Apostle, serving Bedford County since 1816.
Well, you're in for a big treat today because I've done these programs from a lot of places, but I have never done a radio show, I don't think, from a construction trailer. And this isn't just any construction trailer. We are on the sideline of the main line of the Pennsylvania Turnpike near New Baltimore, Pennsylvania. And as this show wears on, you will learn what I'm doing here. But this is going to be a very, very fascinating time we're going to have here. Have you ever driven down the Pennsylvania Turnpike? I see the hands. Yes. Well, how could you miss it, especially if you live in Bedford County? It's like the most important highway that's ever come through this part of the world. Well, I have a special treat for you today because we are going to speak to some people who actually know a lot about this road and what's going on right now, and we're going to tell you a little bit about what used to go on this turnpike. Joining me is Carl DeFebo, who is the Director of Public Relations and Marketing. This fella has worked there for 25 years, is that right, Carl?
15, just about 15. 16
Where
years.
Where did I get 25? Because you look really young, so that must be
well, that's
it.
Nice of you.
So it's 15 years, okay. Yeah. Well, you were telling me you had kids in college and stuff. So, and also joining us is John Cottle, and we're going to be hearing about some of John's work in the second half of our program today. But Carl, I want to address some of this to you at first. You are the official historian from my vantage point. This road has just celebrated 75th anniversary in 2013, am I correct?
October 1st was the 75th birthday.
So what a story. It starts out as a railroad right away in the 1800s, abandoned. They dig a couple of partial tunnels. And then during the Depression, the 1930s, well, tell me the rest. Who came up with the idea?
You know, so there was actually in Harrisburg, flashing back to the 1930s, and you have the New Deal and the Depression is going on, and there was this great search for jobs creation at the time. A large number of Americans were unemployed, and the whole New Deal was all about getting people jobs during the Great Depression. There was a public servant, a bureaucrat in Harrisburg, who actually looked out the window of his office on Front Street one day and saw these abandoned railroad bridge piers. And he harkened back to his childhood, in the greater Everett area somewhere, and remembered thinking about the South Penn Railroad. And he thought, wouldn't it be a cool jobs generation idea to create an all-weather highway cutting through the Allegheny Mountains between Harrisburg and Pittsburgh that would allow motorists to bypass Route 30 at the time, which took some 6 hours for that 200-plus mile trip, and you wouldn't have to worry about whatever weather was being generated on top of the mountains. You would go under the mountains using the old abandoned railroad tunnel. tunnels. And it really grew from there. That was in the early 1930s, and the concept, you know, the concept gathered steam. I mean, there were federal reasons for it, there were state reasons for it, but, you know, in the end, the Turnpike Commission was created in 1935, and construction of the roadway actually began in 38, and the road was opened by 1940. Now, the decision had been made to use contractors on the job, you know, but having said that, there, you know, it was this great kind of coming together of a couple things. So not only the Depression, the increasing popularity of cars, the threat of war in Europe taking place during that time, all these things made politicians at the state and federal levels think that a highway is necessary because of the impending war, but also to create jobs and due to the booming popularity of the automobile. So, you know, it was the recipe, the perfect storm that created the PA Turnpike.
Well, one of the things that's astounding to me, which of course, no way could this be done today, but I understand the entire 165 miles was built in less than 2 years.
Yeah, 22 months from start to finish is really unheard of. You know, we mentioned earlier, you can't even really get out of the design phase of a project. I mean, with all the permitting that takes place, and it was a much different time, you know, 75 years ago when the design and construction were happening almost simultaneously, that the Turnpike had employed hundreds of engineers, and they were designing segments, cranking out the designs, and sending them to the field for the contractors. There was no permitting processes at the time. We were acquiring right-of-way literally as we were building the road. So, you know, you might have an attorney show up at your door to buy your, you know, a portion of your farm 2 days before the bulldozer showed up, hopefully. So, you know, there were stories that, you know, that the bulldozer showed up in advance of the attorneys. So, you know, it was a much different era at the time. This was a very highly publicized project. It was considered to be an engineering marvel. And understand, too, Lloyd, that it predated the interstate system by nearly two decades. So,
yeah, but it also must have been a great deal of pride in it as well. I mean, to have this project occur in your backyard, first four-lane highway ever in the United States of America, and to have it occur in Pennsylvania, I just imagine that must have been the case. And so you probably didn't get a lot of pushback. I'm sure you did in some, but it must have been a very interesting time to see that.
Absolutely. I mean, it was very heralded and covered not only nationally but internationally. I mean, remember, this was a time of engineering marvels. We loved them in America. Yeah. The Golden Gate Bridge was built in the 30s. You know, you had these massive public works projects like the Hoover Dam that had occurred. And so, you know, the public was very fond of these huge, massive public works projects, and the Turnpike was really considered among those engineering marvels, like the dams and the Golden Gate Bridge. And so, it was definitely something that was really only conceived of in the U.S. before. It was the first four-lane limited access highway in the country, and it was just so well covered in the media and talked about in newsreels and on the radio and in newspapers very broadly.
And it had a lot of local impact. I have met some elderly people since I've lived in Bedford County that said that they worked on some of the tunnels. They worked on the Sidling Hill Tunnel, or they worked on the Rays Hill Tunnel, which is now abandoned. But and they said this wasn't easy. You know, they didn't have the kind of safeguards they have today. But it was a mission. They were building this thing at an astonishing speed.
Understand too, Lloyd, that the president had to get involved in approving some federal funding for the creation of the Turnpike, and there were all these VIP visits and, you know, groundbreakings, including federal and state politicians, and it was a great source of pride for Pennsylvania. And as you said, there was no OSHA during that time. There were fatalities during the construction of the Turnpike. It was not uncommon for there to be cave-ins during the tunnels. I mean, you mentioned you're going to talk a little bit later about geotechnical studies. Those types of studies weren't necessarily performed as detailed as they are today to understand what the conditions were beneath the soil or above your head in a tunnel.
And our guest is Carl DeFebo, and also John Collo is going to be joining us. John, I wanted to ask you, so you weren't involved in the Turnpike in 1938, obviously, but you are certainly in 2016. Things have changed. Now you just don't go and have a bulldozer show up in someone's front yard and say, oh, by the way, we're worth the turnpike and we're here to help you. How's it go today? Well, you plan stuff, right?
yes. Yeah. Many years sometimes go in, our design unit develops the project, the plans, and coordinates with the environmental people to work through any permits and develops the plans for the roads, bridges, and our right-of-way department to come up with the project. And once it's done, then we get it in construction to construct it from that standpoint.
Is it fun, though, working for an entity that was the first at this? I mean, there are interstate highways all over this country now, but this was the first one ever, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. There's a sense of pride in our road, and we want to maintain and keep it up to the best possible standards we can. And looking back, the history of it, there is a lot of pride here.
I have friends that live in the Midwest, and they've come to see me, and they've never been through Pennsylvania. So you drive through flat Illinois, you drive through flat Indiana, and even flatter Ohio, and the minute you get to Pennsylvania, things change dramatically, and they start going through those tunnels, and they say, we never saw anything like this ever. So this must have been a very exciting thing back when they started it.
Yes, with the delay of Pennsylvania, the ground, the tunnels, the curves, the grades that they had to work with, and it's obviously first superhighway in America, and like Carl said, it was a pattern that the federal government used in the future for the interstate system.
Carl, this is a big road, 300 and some miles end to end from the Delaware River to the Ohio line, correct?
About 360.
And then you've got a whole other big section that goes into the Wilkes-Barre-Scranton area.
110 miles on the northeastern extension.
And then you've got these little pieces down in southwest Pennsylvania.
Right. About 550 miles in all.
Right, so it's a big, big road. What's the economic impact of this thing on these communities? I mean, do you have people in these communities working here? Do you know you have people from Bedford County working on this project right now?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, when you're talking just about Turnpike employees, I mean, if you look at the original Turnpike between Carlisle and Irwin, if you would drive to these towns off the interchanges like Bedford or, like Somerset, these were small towns that got a great economic boost from the traffic that was generated off the PA Turnpike. And so it really historically has been an economic generator from the very beginning. It was conceived to bring economic prosperity to these communities, but even before it was known fully what the impact could be. And really, during the heyday of automobile travel, when it wasn't quite envisioned how huge this was going to become. And so, yeah, it does. I mean, so when we do projects like this, not only do we have the 2,000 employees who all live and work in the communities across, their toll collectors, their maintenance employees, their engineers like John, but we also will employ dozens of people, sometimes hundreds of people from the local community, again, depending on the scope of the project. In this case, we're not only benefiting there's a direct benefit of the subcontractors, local subcontractors who are hired. We have to purchase fuel. We have to the employees, they get rooms in hotels, they buy lunch at the diner, sure. We buy vehicles and computers and office equipment, and even the project trailer that we're sitting in has to be rented. And so there is a great economic growth that occurs directly and indirectly as a result of these projects.
One of the cool things, the legacy things I discovered since having moved to Bedford County, is that I met some women that are members of the Howard Johnson's Association, or whatever it's called. And these women all worked at Howard Johnson's, at the Midway Howard Johnson's and the Breezewood Howard Johnson's in Bedford County. And they get together once a month and have lunch.
That's awesome.
To remember their days at the Hojos. And the Hojos were on the entire road at one time, weren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that was one of the unique things about the Turnpike. So it was a seamless roadway with no cross traffic, no right. stop signs. And it was just the concept of nonstop travel with unlimited speed limits was unheard of. But the tunnels were also the a main attraction, as were the service plazas. You didn't have to exit the highway to grab a cup of coffee or to have a grilled wiener or a fried clams at the Howard Johnson. You can continue your travels just by pulling off to the side of the road and entering one of the service plazas operated for the first probably 50-some years by Howard Johnson's. And they were, you know, people at the time would get on the turnpike from Harrisburg and from Pittsburgh to travel to the Midway Plaza. That was known as kind of the largest, one of the original plazas, and certainly that they would make it a destination just to have Sunday lunch at Hojo's.
And if you haven't been to the Midway Plaza lately, you should go, because they have an entire pictorial history inside the restaurants and businesses that are in there now, and it's fascinating. It shows you photographs of from the 40s through to the present, and what it was like, the old toll booths and the old alignments and the old Hojo's and the guys in white suits pumping gas for you. I mean, it's a great little visit back to memory lane. Well, Carl, let me just ask you before we go to the break. Do you have any big plans at the Turnpike Commission coming up, or is there other massive or massive things happening, like this big slide project you've just finished here in New Baltimore?
Yeah, I will say that overall, the total reconstruction of the Turnpike is something that's been ongoing for 15 years, Lloyd. And, you know, being a 75-year-old highway is certainly a privilege and an honor, but it comes with it the age of our system. When this highway was built, it was designed to last about 50 years, and we certainly have outpaced the design life of this toll road. So we are in the position of where we have to rebuild it from the ground up. These major total reconstruction projects that we're doing, you know, they involved replacing every component of the highway, not only the travel lanes, but the median, the shoulders, the drainage, the lighting, the ramps and the bridges, and, you know, every component of that highway. And it is a huge challenge that can cost upwards of $20 million per mile to complete. And understand, unlike the original builders of the Turnpike, we are dealing with 25,000, 50,000 vehicles a day on some parts of the Turnpike. You know, this is our number one spending priority. We're spending probably upwards of $500 million a year on highway improvements. A lot of that is focused on total reconstruction and widening to six lanes. It's much safer for our customers. It addresses not only the condition of the road, but also the capacity, because traffic continues to grow year to year. So we've rebuilt more than 115 miles of our system so far, and that's going to continue to be one of our top priorities.
Well, it sounds exciting, and I can just tell you my favorite improvement is the Easy Pass, because you can go through the Easy Pass like at 50 miles an hour now. You don't have to slow down, especially in the western parts of the Turnpike, and I guess that's going to be coming to this part of the east part as well. When we come back, we're going to rejoin some of these guys, and we're going to have a new guest named Matthew McCann, who's with Stahl Schaefer Engineering. Matt and John are going to explain to us about some of the nitty-gritty and technical stuff they're doing here in New Baltimore when Bedford County Speaks continues.
Hello, I'm Mark Thomas. Perhaps while driving around Bedford County lately, you may have noticed our current outdoor billboards. Stephanie March, General Manager of Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, knows better than anyone about our mission of total satisfaction. When we talk about our seven ways to save, we mean not only are we saving you money, but also saving you some time and aggravation. Our attention to complete satisfaction makes sure you're happy with our vehicles and service, which keeps us happy to have a loyal customer. Our seven ways to save is a process to ensure you have complete information to make the decision that's best for you when you purchase a car or truck. We encourage you to visit Thomas Chevrolet Subaru right here in Bedford and see for yourself why our goal is your complete satisfaction. Visit us on Business Route 220 north of Bedford, or visit us 24/7 online at thomaschevrolet.com.
This is Dave Cubbins from Bedford County Department of Emergency Services. You're listening to Bedford County Speaks over News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Now, let's head back to today's Bedford County Speaks.
Joining me today is John Cottle and Matt McCann. One of these fellows is an engineer project manager for the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission, and the other, Matt McCann, works for Stahl Schaefer Engineering, and he is a geotechnical manager. And I know it's going to sound kind of complex, but it's going to get very easy, so just bear with us. So Matt and John, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. I really appreciate it. First of all, Matt, you're working on a project right now in the new Baltimore area where we are. As Carl said, the phone call started a few years ago. What the devil did you do with the trees on the route, on the highway? What did you do? Why'd you take all the trees off the mountain? And now I'm learning that you had something called a slide. So this is fascinating. You are going to realign this road down here a little bit. But the big project was to remove the threat of the slide. Could you kind of tell me in layman's language what a slide is and why it slides down a mountain?
Well, it's actually just a area of instability that occurs. And in this case, it's a translational slide, but I'll explain it in layman's terms. It's like a two-layer cake. If you have a two-layer cake and you were to tip the plate up at a certain point, the top layer of the cake would slide off of the bottom layer. And because of that, it's because of the icing in the middle. That's the failure plane. So the idea is to excavate the hillside down to where you remove that failure plane, or the icing per se. Then you're back to an area where it's a stable situation.
So this is a natural geological condition. This isn't anything you guys did at the turnpike to cause this to happen.
No, God himself did it. I mean, it's something that just occurs in geology when you get an area, a weak layer of material that's unable to support the material on top of it. The material on top of it will slide.
So essentially what you did was you took this top layer of the cake off and you put it back.
Yes.
And now we go by the new Baltimore church, you know, St. John's here. That's really where we are. And we look up at this new mountain that has grass on it instead of trees now. And this thing won't slide anymore.
No, it won't, because the failure mechanism was the slide plane, or the icing between the two layers of cake. We excavated down to the point where we removed all that. And then the unique part of this project is we took that same material, or the top layer of the cake, and we put it right back where it was before.
So what I saw today when you showed me around this project was a massive amount of earth and rock being moved around.
Yes.
Any idea how much rock and dirt was moved?
Actually, for the slide itself, it was around 2.2 million cubic yards, and the hillside adjacent to it was about 1.6 million cubic yards, 3.9.
Yeah, for those of you who can't see this, I want you just to imagine about 50 little Tonka toys pushing dirt all over the side of this mountain, except in this case, the Tonka toys are, looks like dump trucks, that some of which are maybe 25 or 30 feet high, and they can haul enormous amounts of material, and they dragged it off this mountain and took it away someplace. This project is just enormous. John Cottle is the engineer project manager for, I guess, this whole job, not just the moving of the mountain. But what are we going to get out of this, John? Are we going to get a new road over here? Is that what's happening?
Eventually, that is the long-range plan to, as part of our total reconstruction, to come through this area and reconstruct the existing lanes, widen it out, and provide three lanes each way.
So we've been, any of us that have been up and down the turnpike from east to west, all the way from the Ohio line to the Delaware River, we've seen a lot of construction over the last 10 years. You seem to be making the turnpike wider. So is this a long-term project that we're going to be seeing for some years to come?
Yes, I mean, it's a long-term goal of the turnpike to reconstruct it. And in this area, for this project here, we're looking at this area, reconstructing it. And the first phase was to handle the slide and resolve that issue now. And then the future total reconstruction projects in this area will then come here in the future.
Are people in Everett and Bedford going to see some evidence of this widening in the years in the future? Will it actually come through as six lanes through that area someday?
Someday, yes. Yeah. That's the ultimate goal. And as our design unit puts together the project, sometimes we handle what we call early action jobs to take care of the overhead bridge in the area, so it, you know, minimizes the impact to the area during construction, gets that done.
We're speaking to John Cottle from the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission, and also Matt McCann with an engineering firm called Stahl Schaefer. And I understand you were a turnpike person for many years before becoming a Stahl Schaefer person. So I want to ask you, Matt, you're the geologist in the crowd here today. Dirt and rock is important in roads, isn't it?
It's very important to roads. Yeah, I mean, it's the whole bed that it sits on. So, you know, I mean, maybe I'm a little you know, biased, but I mean, it's the most important part. Not really, but I mean, if you're a geologist, you have to consider that the bedding and the road bed that the highway and asphalt's placed on is very important.
So does your firm also design the drainage and things of that nature, or is that something else?
Our firm is an all-purpose firm. We mm-hmm. do all the engineering disciplines, drainage, highway design, pavement design, everything from A to Z.
Well, you showed me this project of removing the slide and putting this wedding cake back or whatever it was, and I just saw also a lot of excavation where you have new drainage basins, you have new irrigation pipes, you have some environmental impact things you've done. So I guess, does this occur in all the new projects? Is this how you upgrade as you go along?
Yes, you do. And the environmental part of it is very important, but all those things have to work together to make the job complete. So, you know, when you design a section of roadway like this, I mean, all of those disciplines go into it. You have to consider all those things.
When we were out on the job site, you were showing me all this nifty high-tech stuff, and one of which I saw was a transit that you had on top of the hill looking at prisms down on this new revised mountain, I'll call it. And were these things available years ago, or is this new technology we're seeing today?
Well, I mean, it's relatively new technology. Yes, you know, there's a total station, a laser surveying out there now that creates a cloud of points that virtually creates a 3D picture for you. Mm-hmm. In this case, we are using it to monitor prisms that are mounted on the slide area so we can tell, you know, which direction they're moving, whether it be up and down or right to left, to a reasonable degree of accuracy.
Well, the next time you take a ride on the turnpike and you're driving down the turnpike through the area of New Baltimore past St. John's Church, there's all kinds of things going on here. They have scraped back a mountain. They've fixed this slide. They're going to add lanes. They're building drainage basins. They're putting in new irrigation. I suspect there'll also be some electronic equipment in here for speed control, things of that nature. You're going to have in there as well, or what?
There's a lot of planning that goes into it. You know, from our design to developing the plans with all the different segments, the road, bridges. You know, whether they decide IT equipment would be installed here, or our traffic department. That all goes through in the design and develop the plans that are put out to bid, and then we, you know, hopefully get a good contractor and work with them, and a construction manager with Stahl Schaefer here to work with the contractor and get everything built in accordance with the plan, and, you know, see how things, if any issues develop, try to work through those issues and minimize the impact.
And it seems to me that what you're doing here has some direct economic impact for the community. I was asking about where some of this stuff was coming from. And some of the equipment is coming from local firms. You've got some of the rock and stone coming from places like New Enterprise. The heavy equipment is coming from out of state, but there's some other things that you do. So our own community is participating in this job, it seems.
Yeah. Independence, the contractor here, they've hired some local subcontractors, New Enterprise Stone Lime. They have some subcontractors from the Somerset area doing some work. So, yes, there is some local involvement here with the contractor here.
Matt, if you had to do this all over again with this mountain moving, I call it, you've done, have you learned anything from this job? Because it's been kind of a one-of-a-kind thing, hasn't it?
It has been. It's definitely a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You know, like I had told you previously, there's not probably a lot of cases where you want to take the side of a mountain and, you know, replace it exactly back where it was again. But in this case, it made sense to do that.
Our guests have been Matthew McCann and John Cottle from the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission. And we want to thank you both for taking the time to do this. It's really been terrific. And I want to remind you that today's program, as always, is brought to you by the Bedford County Chamber of Commerce. Proudly supports and celebrates the business community of Bedford County. To learn more, visit them online at bedfordcountychamber.com. Matt and John, thanks a million. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Bedford County Speaks was presented this morning by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, right on 220 in Bedford, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I look forward to joining you next time, right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD. Until then, enjoy your weekend. This is Lloyd Roach.
You have been listening to Bedford County Speaks. Listen each Saturday, beginning at 8:30, to hear about the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is a presentation of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310 WBFD. Thanks for listening.